WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports on this Wednesday, June 22nd, 2016. I am your host, Al Martin. We've got a fun-filled hour in store for each and every one of you out there listening. On today's Current Sports, we will give you a recap of what took place yesterday evening. Well, I should say all day yesterday, the first round of the Michigan Amateur Championship at Eagle Eye Golf Course. That's right, right here in mid-Michigan. Right after I got off the airwaves during yesterday's radio show, I headed over to Eagle Eye to just check out how the first round won, the first round of the Michigan Amateur Championship, how the atmosphere was. So you get to hear from actually one of the local golfers who has a pretty close tie to Michigan State University, how he fared in round one. You don't want to miss that. We will also talk about, yes, the United States soccer team, the men's soccer team, which fell to Argentina yesterday. Also, later on in the hour, we'll talk a little bit of Detroit Tigers baseball as the Detroit Tigers top the Seattle Mariners. And the great Tiger Woods, he held a press conference today addressing his health as it pertains to when he will make his return to the world of golf. So, lots to get to on today's show. We open up our phone lines, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports, or you can even tweet me at Al Martin WKAR. So much to get to, so little time, so let's get right to it with your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. All right, folks, we start with local golf action. The 105th Michigan Amateur Championship, round one, took place yesterday at Eagle Eye Golf Course. I want to give you guys a quick update as it pertains to the leaderboard as we speak. Of course, it will be held until the 25th throughout this week. And as of right now, it looks as though Andrew Chapman, Nick Gunthorpe, and Kenneth Hudson, they lead the field at 4 under. Chapman and Gunthorpe, they are through 12 holes. Kenneth has yet to tee off. And, of course, there are a slew of local golfers that have close ties to the Michigan State Golf Program. Dan Ellis, MSU assistant coach. Casey Lubon, MSU head coach. Carson Castellani, past MSU golf team captain. Sam Weatherhead, current MSU golf team member. And A.J. Verrecchios, current MSU golf team member, are all balling out in this year's Michigan Amateur Championship. And I got a chance to chat with Casey, which you'll get to hear my interview with him in just a second. He posted an 81 to finish up round one. Again, the Michigan Amateur Championship begins with 2 rounds of stroke play, so today will be the final day of stroke play over a 2-day period. At the completion of stroke play, I should say, the field is cut down to 64 for the first round of match play. Match play continues for 3 days and 6 rounds until a champ emerges on the final afternoon of the tournament. So ideally, that match play round is just like the NCAA men's basketball tourney, all right? And we'll have coverage throughout the entire week from Eagle Eye Golf Course. Some Michigan State football news yesterday, as it was announced that lineman Brandon Clemens was granted a 6th year of eligibility by the NCAA. Clemens, who is projected starter, I should say, at right guard, graduated in December with a degree in psychology, and he will pursue a 2nd degree in sociology this upcoming fall. It was important news for the Spartans as they had lost 3 starting linemen to the NFL this spring. The Detroit Tigers topped the Seattle Mariners 4-2 yesterday at Comerica Park. The Tigers had a solid outing from Justin Verlander, who only allowed 2 runs on 6 hits over 7 innings for the Tigers. He walked 1 and struck out 5. The difference maker in the game was Mike Aviles. He came through with a big hit in the 8th. Aviles' infield single with the bases loaded proved to be the difference on Tuesday night and the Tigers added another run later in the inning to round out the score to 4-2. The Tigers will take on the Mariners again tonight at 7:10 p.m. in the D. You can catch that game, of course, on Fox Sports Detroit. ESPN's Mark Stein reported this morning that the Detroit Pistons could be a suitor for free agent and Grand Ledge native Al Horford. The Pistons were mentioned along with the Orlando Magic, L.A. Lakers, as teams interested in his services. Now, Horford averaged a little over 15 points per game, 7.3 rebounds per game for the Atlanta Hawks this past year. That will be a great addition to the team if they can snag Horford. It looks like Stanley Johnson, though, will play in the Orlando Summer League for the Detroit Pistons after all. After Stan Van Gundy, head coach, said in April that Johnson would be spending his summer exclusively working on skills work and not playing games, it seems like he's had a change of heart. Bob Beyer, Pistons associate head coach, who was training Johnson out in California, encouraged Van Gundy to let Johnson play in the summer league. Van Gundy said the decision came down to needing Johnson to see some live game situations to work on the skills that he is currently developing. The Pistons begin practice next Tuesday, June 28th in Orlando. Games are July 2nd to the 8th at the Orlando Magic Practice Court in Amway Center. Deanna Nolan, remember that name? Of Flint, Michigan. She was honored yesterday by the WNBA as one of the 20 greatest and most influential players in the league's history. Nolan made the cut from over 60 nominees, a list that was made in celebration of the WNBA's 20th anniversary. She was a five-time WNBA All-Star who played for the Detroit Shock from 2001 to 2009. She averaged 13.6 points, 3.8 rebounds, and 3.2 assists for her career. She won three WNBA titles for the Shock and was the Finals MVP back in 2007. Nolan left the WNBA in 2009 to focus on overseas basketball, where she makes significantly more moolah. I remember watching Deanna Nolan back in the day, and she was one of my favorite players. All right, the United States men's national soccer team fell last night to Argentina, 4-0, in the semifinals of the Copa American semis. And the semifinal was the first time the U.S. had advanced out of the group stage since 1995, but were unable to keep up with the Argentina national team. The U.S. was playing without all of their first team selections, as they had three players suspended for the match on yellow card accumulation, but it wouldn't have mattered as the two-time World Cup champion Argentina squad was clearly the better team on the field. Argentinian superstar Lionel Messi broke Gabriel Batistuta's all-time Argentine goals record with a fantastic free kick from 25 yards in the 32nd minute. Is Messi good or what? The U.S. ended their Copa run with victories over Costa Rica, Paraguay, and Ecuador, and losses to Argentina and Colombia. And last but not least, Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods' long, winding comeback continues as he is not ready yet to commit to future tournaments. He says, quote, "I'm still progressing. I'm still getting stronger. I'm excited about what has transpired so far. Woods has now missed 8 major championships going back to his 2008 ACL surgery. If he misses the Open in 3 weeks, it will mark the first time he skipped 3 majors in a row. He seemed more hopeful than before when asked about the possibility of future tournaments rather than ruling out any. He had this to say, quote, "No, I haven't. I'm just playing it week to week, and I keep getting better. I keep getting physically better. I just hope that everything clicks in and I can do it sooner rather than later." That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Let's start the show.
Chris, people have been reacting to the news all day on social media with a mix of comments, everything from Roll Tide to complete outrage. But one thing's for certain after today is that Cam Robinson and Hootie Jones will not face criminal charges.
It's kind of odd situation that things went down the way they did. I don't think any other 18, 19-year-old kids would get off on that in this area.
get in that type of trouble with firearm and narcotics. That's not Lawrence Jones to me. That's not Hootie to me, you know?
The main reason that I'm doing this is that I refuse to ruin the lives of two young men who have spent their adolescence and their teenage years working and sweating while we were all home under air conditioning.
Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Happy, happy hump day. That's right. It is Wednesday, June 22nd, 2016. It's a beautiful day outside. The sun is out. The birds are chirping. I mean, how can you not be in a good mood, right? We begin today's show with what you just heard. One of the most ridiculous comments I have ever heard from a judge. I couldn't believe it when he said it, folks. I've listened to it about 10 times now, and it just blows my mind every time I hear that quote. Just couldn't believe it. Excuse me, district attorney, not judge. Jerry Jones, if you haven't been following this story, just mind-blowing stuff. Mind-blowing stuff. Prosecution of Alabama left tackle Cam Robinson and safety Lawrence Hootie Jones has been declined. According to a filing from the Louisiana District Attorney's Office. The filing cites insufficient evidence for Robinson on charges of a possession of a controlled dangerous substance and illegal possession of a stolen firearm, and for Jones, possession of a controlled dangerous substance. Now, both were arrested in mid-May in their hometown of Monroe, Louisiana. A court appearance set for late last week was delayed before Monday's news. Now, again, this is coming from District Attorney Jerry Jones. He told KNOE-TV this. I want to play this snippet from Jones right now.
The main reason that I'm doing this is that I refuse to ruin the lives of two young men who have spent their adolescence and their teenage years working and sweating while we were all home under air conditioning.
Among the charges, Robinson was faced with possession of a stolen firearm, a felony, something Jerry Jones says he couldn't prove in court even if he wanted to.
And even if I could get DNA showing that he had touched it at some point in time, that does not mean that he obtained it. Does not mean that it was possession of stolen things.
Yeah, folks, according to the police report, an officer approached the players in the vehicle at a park that was closed and smelled like marijuana. Now, the report alleges that a bag of marijuana and a handgun were in plain view, in plain sight here. And a stolen handgun was found under the passenger seat. Oh, boy, I tell you. Again, the two players involved in this are two stars. Two stars for the Alabama college football team. Cam Robinson and Lawrence Hootie Jones. Now, Robinson was allegedly driving the vehicle with Jones as his passenger. The stolen firearms charge Robinson faced was a felony, while the other charges for Jones and himself were misdemeanors. And again, District Attorney Jerry Jones decided to dismiss the charges. Again, he said, I just want to read the quote one more time, folks. Quote, I want to emphasize once again that the main reason I'm doing this is that I refuse to ruin the lives of two young men who have spent their adolescent and teenage years working and sweating while we were all in the air conditioning, end quote. That's his main reason why he decided to dismiss the charges. Even though these two young men were caught clearly red-handed doing something that if it had been any other individual, if these were not two stars from the Alabama college football team, you better believe, and you can take this to the bank, you better believe that they would have felt the full extent of the law. Simple as that. Simple as that, folks. So it raises a question that's been brought up countless times here throughout our, tenure here on Current Sports when discussing the college athlete or just athlete in general in comparison to the mere mortals of our society. When caught red-handed doing something wrong, there is always this overlaying conversation that, okay, if this wasn't so-and-so, if this wasn't a star football player or star basketball player, would this situation have a different outcome? And clearly, this is a prime example of a situation where you can throw on a different name other than Cam Robinson and Hootie Jones, throw on an average Joe. You better believe that this would have had a different outcome. I just couldn't believe that a man in the position of Jerry Jones would come out and make a comment like this. First off, there's multiple ways you can go with this. Because, first off, when he says that, the main reason I'm doing this is that I refuse to ruin the lives of two young men who have spent their adolescent and teenage years working and sweating while we were all in the air conditioning. What about those out there in regular society who are just blue-collar working individuals at whatever respective job they have? Whatever you do. Whether you are a construction worker, whether you work at the post office, whether you are a firefighter, whatever profession you have. Basically, what District Attorney Jerry Jones is saying is that it's not comparable to that of what Cam Robinson and Hootie Jones are doing. I just don't understand this logic whatsoever. And then you heard in the second part of that story, Jones saying that, there was insufficient evidence. Well, again, according to the police report, the officer approaches the player's vehicle at the park that was closed, by the way, and could clearly smell weed. Clearly. And then the report goes on to say, or allege, I should is the correct terminology I should use, alleges that a bag of marijuana and a handgun were in plain sight. And a stolen handgun was found under the passenger seat. I don't know how that's insufficient evidence. There's a lot of loopholes here. So it goes back to that whole discussion about athletes being entitled and feeling entitled. Well, it's hard to, argue the contrary when you see a story so blatant as this. Now, Alabama coach Nick Saban, formerly of Michigan State, hasn't announced any punishment for the two players, saying multiple times that he wanted to gather more information about the arrest. But again, and I'm seeing conflicting reports with that because another report that I see, courtesy of KNOE TV, is saying that the University of Alabama is going to explore certain options when it comes to punishment for Robinson and Jones. So there's nothing set in stone right now. If I'm Coach Saban, I think you have to, even though, again, these are two primary players to what you do on the gridiron. You can't let this one slide. You can't let this one slide. I just don't see, already from a reception standpoint, there's been mixed reactions as well, because I've read a few comments online concerning this story, and some have been in defense of Robinson and Jones, more so from the fact that these two individuals have had no prior problems with the law. They seem like high character young men. But again, they got caught doing something that goes against the law. So I would be very surprised if Nick Saban doesn't do anything in this situation, whether it's a suspension or having these guys engage in community service. Something has to be done. But the question I want to pose here at the top of the hour, as we proceed here, we'll take your calls throughout this entire hour up until 2 o'clock. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. I want to pose this question out there. Do you believe that athletes get special treatment? when it comes to the law or any other area. I want to know your thoughts on this story. 517-355-9527. I want to go to the man behind the glass right now, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's current sports, Isaac Constance. Isaac, this took place kind of in your backyard out in Louisiana. Reaction to this story.
Well, I can first of all say that in Louisiana, it's no easy task working in the air conditioning during the heat of summer. But this kind of confirms and just reaffirms what we thought about athletes and their treatment under the law in the first place. But I don't think it's ever been blatantly stated as much as this. What's sad is Jerry Jones, not only does he sound like Cowboys owner Jerry Jones, but he made a point to prepare this statement, it seems like, and to not only say, I'm giving these guys a break because they're athletes, but to say, and I emphasize once again, that because these guys were out sweating while the rest of us were working in AC, also, you mentioned and perfectly picked through that claim. That's obviously not the case for everybody, a painter or a carpenter, whatever. I mean, there are so many professions where you don't get that privilege. But the fact that athletes and college athletes at that saw that sort of treatment, yeah, it is a little bit disturbing, and it reaffirms what we already thought. One of my favorite examples for unfair processing of the law actually comes when JT Barrett tried to pull out the "Do you know who I am?" claim.
Oh, I mean, hate that. That's like the worst one you can use. You know what I mean? No matter if it's an athlete or an actor or a music artist, I hate when I hear someone that's of that stature. When they get in trouble with the law, do you know who I am? You know, another example I always bring up is the young woman who was a sideline reporter for
Britt
ESPN.
Britt
McHenry. Saw when I think her car got towed or something like that.
Yep.
And she goes into the office to try and get her car back. And she pulls that line. Do you know who I am? I'm on TV. And then she goes to degrade whoever the individual is that she's talking to. I just hate that, dude. We got a lot of sick people in society.
It's the worst. And this is the type of statement and the type of fuel that sort of mistreatment of other people and the glorification of athletes and other celebrities, that is what this runs on. Because it's a positive feedback loop at the end of the day. Because people make statements like this, yes, athletes obviously do get preferential treatment. And because they keep doing that, nobody really wants to break that chain of command. But this is really not how it is supposed to be, of course. I agree that these players should face serious sanctions. It sounds like they're guilty to me. Like you mentioned, smelling marijuana in a car and seeing a handgun, I mean, I don't know, from my experience and just hearing stories about on campus at Michigan State University,
right,
there have been quite a few arrests simply on that suspicion alone. And then you will have the lawyer or the prosecuting attorney go and press charges for the district attorney whose job is to serve the community. I mean, this is not somebody hired, because obviously this isn't a malicious act, but this isn't someone hired to necessarily go after these kids, but
to let
them off for nothing. No, I mean, this was clearly unfair treatment.
Yeah, and again, that's my next point here. I mean, it is a question of fairness at the end of the day. You know, again, if this had been any other Joe Schmo, any other John Smith or Bill, whatever name you want to use, this would have a different outcome. It would have had a different outcome, simple as that. And then, you know, another thing, to pick his quote apart, because, again, it's one of the most ridiculous quotes I've ever heard of. And, you know, he goes on to say, the main reason I'm doing is that I refuse to ruin the lives. Now, first off, stop right there. When it comes to the charge here, we're talking about, you know, seeing a handgun in the car and marijuana. I don't know if, let's say these two individuals were prosecuted and had to serve some time here, ruining their lives, I don't know if I would go that far. That's a very bold statement. To me, when you talk about ruining your life, I mean, you're talking about you're talking about something way worse than this, okay? For me, these are two preeminent players for the Alabama college football team. And again, you look at Robinson, he's an all SEC left tackle entering his junior year. You know, 6'6", 325. You know, he started every game since his freshman year back in 2014. Mel Kiper has him as the number 7 on his early 2017 big board. I mean, these are two important players for the team. But who's to say if Jerry Jones was to inflict some sort of punishment here, who's to say that that was going to ruin their life? You know, I just think that was the wrong. The quote was just so unrealistic to me when I heard it. I couldn't believe that he would go that far as to say that this is going to ruin their lives if that was to hand down some sort of punishment for them. I don't get that. It's a question of status here, though. I think that if this had been, you know, the third string right guard, it would have had a different outcome. Well,
and the other part of this is the law is not meant to ruin people's lives or any of that. It's supposed to make amends for wrongs caught up to society or to fix things by putting people who belong behind bars. And obviously, you don't have to think that's the case for every single crime. Marijuana possession, I mean, honestly, at least in my opinion, that's a victimless crime. There's nobody really being hurt because of that.
Now, the stolen handgun. Yeah,
that's a different story.
Exactly. Man. When looking at that, I mean, you see Keith Applin kind of going through a situation, you know, to put a local tie on this thing. Former Michigan State basketball star Keith Applin. I mean, he was found not once but twice delving into firearms that are in vehicles. And, you know, it's one of those situations you say, first off, why? You know what I mean? I mean, come on, dude. Be smarter than that. But, you know, you look at the situation and the outcome when it comes to the law. I think this needs to be investigated further. When you hear the reasoning behind Jones and why he decided to make this move, it makes completely no sense. So I think it would be a crime not to do further research as to the justification as to why Jones decided to take this route. And I do think that the officials down there in Louisiana will take another look at this. And I don't think this is the last that we've heard of this story, Isaac.
Honestly, though, I do think it's the last we've heard of Jerry Jones, probably. I'd be shocked if there is not a resignation letter that is being tendered. I mean, honestly, I have never heard of something this outrageous and this biased and prejudiced. Now, I mean, there's no real good way you can spin this because he obviously is showing preferential treatment to certain members of society. And, you know, that's something that happens once in a while behind closed doors. And, you know, you decry it when that happens. But to come out in the open and treat it like, yeah, that's an acceptable practice, that's a new extreme that I've heard of.
And it makes me look at the bigger picture, because if you have a guy like, how many Jerry Joneses are out there? You know, it makes me think that, because we all know, and we've looked at the legal justice system here in America, there are so many loopholes. It's like Swiss cheese, so many holes in it. And you look at a situation like this concerning athletes who clearly were not doing what they were supposed to do. How many officials look at athletes in that vein? Simple as that. Because, you know, I think we get caught up as a society when it comes to the all-empowering athlete out there. We look at them as almost like heroes. You know what I mean? We put them on this pedestal, which in a way they are sports heroes. But, you know, comparing, I always hate when we try to compare athletes to just those who have other jobs in society. Like a hero to me, I hesitate using a hero when discussing sports, because a hero to me, Isaac, is someone out there risking his or her life to protect our natural society.
Agreed.
You know, a police officer, you know, a firefighter.
A soldier.
Those are the real heroes of society. So I hesitate anytime I kind of cringe a bit anytime I hear someone discussing an athlete as a hero. I always hesitate with that. But, you know, when looking at athletes, we put them on such a pedestal. We put celebrities on such a pedestal. You know, to tell you a quick story here, Isaac, and you probably went through this when you first started covering sports here at WKR or elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
When I first started my very first internship at the Big Ten Network Student U here on the campus of Michigan State University, I remember my first event that I worked, it was a Michigan State men's basketball game. And I'm here at Michigan State. I'm this big hoop fanatic, and I'm watching guys like Draymond Green dunk the basketball. And I'm seeing, you know, I'm watching these guys via TV. And then I remember my first game that I worked, and I walk in at the Breslin, and I look on the hardwood, and my jaw's on the floor. I'm like, oh my gosh, There's Draymond Green. I've been watching him on TV, you know, since I came to Michigan State. Oh, my, he's such a fantastic athlete. Remember the first time I met Al Horford when I had an internship at Channel 6, and I walk in the gym, and there's Al Horford with his brother John in there, and you know, he's just such a, you know, he's so tall, and, I, you know, my jaw's on the ground. But again, as you know, as you're in this business more and more and more,
you're numb.
That starts to fade.
Yep.
You know, you start to look at these guys as just normal people, especially when you talk to them one-on-one in interviews and so on and so forth. And from I can see perception-wise how, you know, other people who don't have that day-to-day interaction with these athletes who are on TV 24/7, with these athletes who are talked about all the time, I can see how you can easily put them on a pedestal. But these are just people at the end of the day. It is not fair to give preferential treatment to an athlete or any other person of that same stature in comparison to the norms, the quote-unquote norms of society, just because of their respective status. That is so wrong, and I think it happens far too often here in America and beyond. And this is a sad example of that right there in Louisiana.
Well, and like I said, this all feeds back into itself, because when you hear about athletes not signing autographs and, you know, not acting and like they're a normal person, being averse to all sorts of attention on the streets from fans, that's because of things like this. Because of the treatment, they're deified. They're treated like gods by some people, including Jerry Jones. And at the end of the day, you got to remember, some of these kids, I mean, now I can actually say some are younger than me, some are the same age. And at the end of the day, being an athlete doesn't matter that much. You make some money, you make a bunch of people happy, but it's what you do afterwards, what you do with that money, that really can turn you into a hero or a villain. And I've got to say, a lot of athletes don't do that well. I mean, under all the spotlight,
right,
they think that they are immortal, that they're untouchable. And that is the problem that we currently face. And I don't know what needs to be done to take it down, but it's not this. If anything, and I'm not condoning this, but there's no situation in which athletes should be given preferential treatment, because then that sets a model for everybody else who looks up to them or knows them that maybe that is okay. If anything, right, really, they should be held to a higher standard.
Exactly. And, you know, for me, what makes an athlete a hero is what they do with that status. You know what I mean? You know, like a Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali is called a hero because of what he did out of the boxing ring. Joe Frazier, or knocking out Sonny Liston. Muhammad Ali was one of those athletes that did something with the platform that he had. You know, he refused to fight in Vietnam because of his religious beliefs. That was an example that gave a lot of people confidence that were struggling with that paradigm between their religion and their country. And it goes beyond that for me. So, folks, what do you think? Can I play that quote just one more time? Because it's so idiotic, Isaac. One more time.
The main reason that I'm doing this is that I refuse to ruin the lives of two young men who have spent their adolescence and their teenage years working and sweating while we were all home under air conditioning.
Among the charges, Robinson was faced with possession of a stolen...
Yeah, again, folks, District Attorney Jerry Jones, when it comes to why he decided to drop the charges with Cam Robinson and Lawrence Hootie Jones, stars of the Alabama Crimson Tide college football team. What do you think about this whole thing? 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. When we come back, we will talk about the United States men's national soccer team that fell to Argentina in Copa America last night. We'll discuss that as well as bring you coverage from the Michigan Amateur Championship at Eagle Eye Golf Course, round two taking place right now. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Got to remind you that it is Wednesday, and each and every Wednesday here at the WKAR TV studios on the campus of Michigan State University, We record Current Sports TV at 3 p.m. right after I get off the airwaves here. I will be chatting with Paul Sternberg of the St. John's Red Wings boys golf team. The Red Wings actually won their very first state championship in 55 years. How cool is that? Very cool stuff. Paul will be in the house here at the WKAR-TV studio to talk about that accomplishment as well as just the entire paradigm of the world of golf and more. You don't want to miss it. It will air tomorrow night at 10:30 p.m. on WKAR-TV. Again, I also want to give a big shout out to the city of Cleveland. Yes, that's right. Cleveland, Ohio, as the parade for the Cleveland Cavaliers, I believe, is still taking place right now. What time did the parade take place, Isaac? Do you know?
I don't know what time it started at. I know people were lining the streets early in the morning.
Oh, I know. I saw some of the pictures. It's slated that, you know, between 800,000 and 1 million people will be down in the city of Cleveland to witness the parade. And I didn't get a chance to read the Instagram post of LeBron James, who posted a candid message to all of his haters out there who didn't think that he would win a championship in Cleveland and who have really just hated on his entire career. Can I read the Instagram post real quick, Isaac? I'm going to read the...
Bear with me here.
Quote, "They said you lost a step. Wasn't explosive as once was. The best days was in the real view. Questioned your drive, your leadership, your commitment. You don't have killer instinct. Going back home is the worst mistake in your career. He got the coach fired. Players traded. Won't work between him and Kyrie. Him and Kev won't work. Love your teammates too much. There's no way he can deliver a championship in his hometown, etc., etc., etc. But guess what? That's none of my business. Hashtag strive for greatness. Hashtag this one is for the land. Hashtag put some respect on my name. Ha, 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 ha. 3! Yes, sir. End quote. That's LeBron James' Instagram post. You know, Isaac, it's so funny because, you know, as you heard in that, I kind of struggled through that because there's some poor grammar
in that grammar.
Instagram post. And LeBron James, it's so comical to me because LeBron James, the LeBron haters are coming out of everywhere just bashing his grammar throughout the entire IG post. I'm seeing here on ESPN, they actually had an analyst come on. Oh, goodness, what's the analyst's name? I forget his name, but he just goes on this rant about how poor LeBron James's grammar was throughout that entire post. Fair or foul?
What? Foul. Well, and here's why. You just won a championship. First off, I don't think you want to spend too much time dedicated towards writing a properly worded Instagram post. But the main reason that I find this foul is that both you and I have had good days, and afterwards you might celebrate a little bit, and celebration usually requires some form of libation, and that leads to a few words being slurred, maybe a few texts that have grammatical errors in them. I'm saying, LeBron, I'm not sure if he was in necessarily pregame mode when he was writing that Instagram post. I think it might have been a little bit later in the night.
Right. It was bad grammar, though. I must admit, it was pretty bad. You know, I'm always conscious, though, whenever I post something to make sure that I've crossed my T's, dotted my I's, made, you know, put things in present and past context. But LeBron just didn't care. Just said, you know what? I'm gonna spell too much as T-O much. That was bad.
Yeah, but for all the hate that LeBron's received over the course of his career, this might be the most welcome kind for him. I think he can deal with the grammar Nazis for once.
A championship just heals all wounds, no matter if they're grammatical or not. So, again, folks, Cleveland, they are holding holding its parade right now as we speak out in Ohio. Congratulations to LeBron James and the Cavs. Well-deserved, to say the least. All right, before we dive into some soccer talk here, I want to talk about the Michigan Amateur Championship, which was taking place right now as we speak, round two action out at Eagle Eye Golf Course. Just a beautiful course. A beautiful course. This week so far has been a beautiful week to get out on the links and play some golf. And I was out there for round one. And I want to give a shout out to a few names that have very close ties to the Michigan State golf team. Those being Dan Ellis, Michigan State assistant coach, Carson Castellani, past MSU golf team captain, Sam Weatherhead, current Michigan State golf team member, A.J. Varekios, current MSU golf team member and the head coach of the Michigan State golf team, Mr. Casey Lubon. They are all competing right now in round two action of the Michigan Amateur Championship. I caught Casey actually as he was finishing up his round one on the ninth hole, the par five, beautiful hole. But I tell you what, now I was talking to Terry Kilday, director of marketing for Hawk Hollow Golf Properties yesterday before I started getting some footage of Casey's final hole. And, you know, Terry was telling me how it was just a completely different course from yesterday morning to yesterday afternoon, because yesterday afternoon, for those that were outside, you guys know it was ridiculously windy. I mean, it was so windy out there, and it made it very challenging for a lot of the golfers in the afternoon to post low scores. So a lot of the low scores that you saw were mostly from morning to early afternoon rounds. Casey actually finished up with an 81 in round one. And to give you guys, again, a quick update of how things have panned out thus far in round two action, Kenneth Hudson is tied with two others, with Andrew Chapman, Nick Gunthrope, as the leaders of the tourney thus far at 4 under. Now, Chapman and Gunthrope, they are through 15 holes. Kenneth has just started his second round, so he's even for the day through 3 holes. So maybe he can make that -4 into a -6, -7, who knows? But Kenneth had a fantastic first round, and Kenneth is a native of Bloomfield Hills. I got a chance to chat with him on his walk to his car to go celebrate at B-Dubs after that stellar round one. But again, I talked to Casey Lubon, and Casey Lubon had some candid things to say concerning the golf course, one in which they do kind of have home court advantage for those that are members of the MSU golf team, seeing as though that team practices at Eagle Eye throughout the entire year, pretty much, when they can, weather allowing, right? So here's what Casey had to say after his first round of 81.
Yeah, it was a rough day. You know, I got off to a bad start on the first 9 holes, and then I played a good back 9, so got some momentum going into tomorrow, but it was a pretty rough start.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's only day one, so keep your spirits up. And, when looking at this course, though, how cool is it to have the Michigan Amateur Championship right here in mid-Michigan?
Well, I tell you what, I've been playing, I've been involved in this championship for 15 years, and it's always been in the same kind of parts of the state. So to have it here at one of the great golf courses in the state, and one that we play a lot, pretty exciting and an honor for the city to host.
As you just said, Casey, you guys play this course a lot. Home course advantage, how big is that?
I would say it certainly factors into that our guys are going to have an advantage, but the difference is it's in tournament mode right now. It's tournament tested, it's fiery out there, whereas when we play in the spring and fall, when we're here, it's softer and a little. So I think it kind of balances out. It's going to be an advantage, but they're going to have to adjust too.
Other than one of the differences being, as you just alluded to, it being tournament mode when you're out here playing, what other differences has the course tried to differentiate from just a normal round out here on any given day, just specifically for this tournament?
Sure. Well, you know, I think they've set it up very fairly, but in a tournament like this, when you have morning tee times and afternoon tee times, it can be quite a difference in the conditions. My assistant coach played at 7:30 this morning, said there was no wind. I play here at 1 o'clock, blowing like crazy. So, but that should balance tomorrow, and we'll see where we're at after 36 holes, but they've set it up beautifully. It's like Superintendent Steve has done an incredible job, so he's putting up a good show for all of us here in mid-Michigan.
What's your favorite hole on this course, Casey?
Oh boy, there wasn't many today. I love the par 5 ninth hole. You know, it's a great risk-reward hole, fun tee shot. But 17 is obviously an iconic classic hole with the Iowan par 3. So the good thing about Chris Lutzke, he didn't design a bad hole. We get to play them all. So,
Casey, how does this course, how does this tournament serve as a pretty accurate litmus test about where you stack up talent-wise as opposed to the rest of the talent here in Michigan?
Yeah, well, certainly, if you can, you know, when I was playing a lot, which I do not anymore, I was playing a lot, you know, you finish in the top 4, the top 8 of this championship, you know you're a good player. And we use it for our guys as a test. For me, it's more of a bring the old guy out and give him a chance to to compete again. But our guys, if they play well here, they know they beat some of the best.
Yeah, it's got to be pretty cool to see, you know, some of your players like Weatherhead out here competing against this competition. Are you also, while also playing, are you also kind of in coach mode as well, seeing what they shoot and giving them advice?
Yeah, I'm more in coach mode right now than I am player mode. You know, we got golf camp going on campus right now. And part of what I worry about in the summer, this is their biggest time of development as players. And they got to play well in the summer if we're going to play well in the fall. So, you know, if they play well today, my 81 is going to be a thing of the past because I'll be excited for them. But I'm going to go out and try and beat them tomorrow.
Gotta love that. Casey, one last thing. Team outlook for next year. How excited are you about your squad next year?
Yeah, you know, I would, you know, other than the score today, it's been such a time of growth and progress for us as a program. And I think that's going to continue right into next year. We bring back an experienced team, but we're also bringing back the most touted recruit in the history, or bringing in the most touted recruit in the history of the program, Andrew Walker, who's going to be a three-time Mr. Golf winner. Never happened in the state of Michigan. So we blend some experience with some youth. You know, we're just kind of going like this. So we got a new facility. Everything's going the right direction. So if I make some birdies tomorrow and the team plays well this fall, you know, we're keep going. So we're excited.
In case you got the chance to see a few of the pictures and video from that new facility, oh my goodness, that's a golfer's dream, right?
Yeah, you know, we're you always say you're living the dream, but when you're in Michigan State Golf right now, you're practicing one of the three or four facilities in the country that are really on that scale. We think it's the nicest and suits our team the most. So it's a pretty good time to be a Spartan. And, you know, I was with the NFL guys the other day who were in town. I said, you know, you helped us build this too. Michigan State, a rising tide lifts all boats, and we've been blessed to be a part of that. So big season coming up, new facility, and hopefully one more day of good golf here.
Yes, much thanks to Casey Lubon, who is the head coach of the Michigan State men's golf team. And to give you guys an update on how Casey is currently playing, well, he's almost done with round two, folks. He bogeyed the fifth, birdied the eighth and ninth, birdied the tenth. So he birdied three holes in a row from the eighth to the tenth hole. Then a bogey on the 11th, bogey on the 13th. Bogey on the 14th. So it's been a roller coaster for Casey today. Birdie's the 15th. He's currently on the 16th hole right now. So again, with posting and 81 in round one and looking at how he's progressing here in round two, he is right now 9 over par. So pretty tough stretch of golf for Casey right now. Again, the leaders, Kenneth Hudson, Andrew Chapman, and Nick Gunthrop. Those three are 4 under here in round two. And after this, you know, these numbers kind of go out the window because in match play, you're paired up. You know, again, it's like the NCAA men's basketball tournament. You're right. It's a field of 64, exactly 64. You pair it up with another man, and you just have to go out there and shoot the lowest score in comparison to that other player. And they will go until they get a champion at Eagle Eye Golf Course. Very cool tournament. And again, we will bring you coverage throughout the rest of the week right here on WKAR's Current Sports. Let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will talk about the United States national men's soccer team, which fell in Copa America last night in the semifinals against Argentina. That and so much more. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Let's talk some soccer. Yeah, rarely do we talk soccer here on our airwaves, much to the despise of our engineer, Isaac Constance, because he is a huge, and I do mean huge, soccer fan. Bit of irony, which took place yesterday, though, as he was at the Detroit Tigers game, and I was on my couch watching the United States men's national soccer team take on Argentina in Copa America. In the semis, Lionel Messi, one of the best to ever do it, right? Argentina, we all know how good that team is. Number one in the world. Pretty good team. Pretty good team. So I sat back and, you know, I'm hearing this dialogue leading up to this match about how America, I mean, they've never been this far, I think, right, Isaac? Ever in Copa America? So, you know, to get to the semis and they get an opportunity to take on the best of the best in Argentina and Lionel Messi, right? And I was hearing this dialogue about how many fans of the United States men's national soccer team and many personnel are just happy just to be there. You know what I mean? And I don't get this mentality because, and there's multiple reasons for this, but in comparison to that of the women's national soccer team, which is number one, numero uno in the world, the men have a long way to go. You would think that the men would want to strive for that excellence and not wait for it, okay? You know, time is of the essence, as I always say. Why not now? I always ask that question in sports. And I felt like watching that match, Isaac, I mean, 3 minutes into it, Argentina scores, and I'm sitting there saying, oh, this is going to be a long match. It's going to be a long day. 4-0, the final, just a complete demolition by Argentina. And, you know, it's really hard to overstate how poor the Americans really were in this semifinal. They laid a huge egg in my eyes when watching this game. And, you know, it's explainable. It is explainable because there's a few things I want to bring up here. The United States desperately miss the suspended trio of Alejandro Bedoya, Jermaine Jones, and Bobby Wood. For sure, folks. Far more than anyone really could have imagined, I think. And Coach Jurgen Klinsmann's decision to start 33-year-old striker Chris, I'm going to mess this name up, Wondolowski. Did I say that right?
Wondolowski.
Wondolowski. That's horrible spelling for his last name, but hey, who am I to judge? And Woods, exactly. You know, his decision to start the 33-year-old striker, that backfired, I thought. But I just, from a mentality standpoint, I just felt like America was just happy to be in this number. And I think that's something that should never be the case when discussing really any American national team, whether it be soccer, whether it be hockey, whatever it is.
Yeah, it's okay to be content. It's another thing to be content and hungry. You saw LeBron James deliver the quote saying, you know what, no matter what happens in this game 7, I'm proud of this team. Obviously, that was not a statement saying anything of the like of, we're going to lose this and I'm okay with that. And that seemed to be the case with America last night. Now, Argentina is the far better team. I mean, you cannot state that clearly enough. If America would have played a perfect game last night, they still would have lost. And the number I put on this one before the game was 3. Could America manage to keep it within 3 goals for most of the game? Because honestly, I had no aspirations, no hope whatsoever of the U.S. winning this game because this is the best attack in the world. However, 0 shots registered from the Americans.
Yeah, I think it was 0. Like 11 for Argentina or something like that.
11 for Argentina, crazy. 7 on goal. I have never heard of a team registering 0 shots. I mean, at some level, honestly, you've just got to shoot from wherever you get the chance to, no matter what the window is, no matter how small the opportunity is, you've got to shoot from midfield if that's what it takes. But to not test the goalie whatsoever, and every single counterattack fell short, you need some sort of individual brilliance. You need some sort of spectacular play as a team and as a unit all around to beat Argentina. But to be competitive, all you need to do is really buckle down, bolster that defense. And the U.S. did not trade offense for defense. They traded offense for nothing. They seemed totally out of sorts throughout that game, and or at least from the highlights that I watched after, because I was at the Tigers game, thankfully, or else I would have watched that game.
Yeah, I turned it off after a while, dude. I was sitting there watching. I'm like, I can't take this anymore. I'd rather watch grass grow. It was that bad. I'm like, you know what? I'm about to go edit for the TV show, and that's what I did.
And
so,
I like Jurgen Klinsmann. He plays a very defensive style. I think you have to when there's a disparity in talent on the field, and I think usually the U.S. is on the short end of that. But you can't trade that for attacking. And starting Wondolowski, like I said, he's horrible. I'm sorry, but he is my least favorite player on the U.S. men's national team. And to start him at striker shows a total lack of ambition, in my opinion, and saying, We're going to hope that this game is 0-0 going to penalty kicks. And that's not only quixotic, but that's not the way to play soccer.
Yeah, you know, this is one of those losses that, you know, again, I could see if the United States was competitive. But, you know, it's a black eye for a program that really came into this match riding so much confidence. You know, it was really cool watching, you know, the commentators talk about how this is such a historic moment, probably the most important game since, you know, since a world, you know, the World Cup for the United States. And they just go out there and just say, bye-bye. You know, to go out like that, you know, come in with a bang and go out with a huh? You know, I just did not, as this program moves forward, I just don't see how they can build upon a performance like this. You know, they were just happy to be there. Just happy to be there, dude. 4 minutes left here on the show, Isaac. You were at the Detroit Tigers game last night. Again, the Detroit Tigers, they get a win over the Seattle Mariners. And you look at, you know, Justin Verlander, he was absolutely fantastic in this game. He allowed 2 runs on 6 hits over 7 innings for the Detroit Tigers. But I saw him in the dugout. The camera panned to JV in the dugout, and he looked a bit frustrated because he did not get any run support. And then all of a sudden, boom, you know, you had Mike Aviles, you know, hit an infield single with the bases loaded. That proved to be the difference. And then they, of course, added another run in the inning to round up the score at 4-2. What'd you see last night from the Tigers?
Well, what I saw was resilience. And it was the same thing that I pointed out the game before when the relievers went 3 straight innings with runners on third base and never really gave in. That's what I saw last night, too. Justin Verlander, it's not as if he was hitless in that game. Guys were getting to his stuff, but Justin Verlander every single time buckled in, delivered the next pitch confidently, and had several important strikeouts. He didn't have all that many on the game necessarily, but when it came to it, he really showed up. And then Rondon off the pine was fantastic too in his performance. Again, a case of they had runners in scoring position, the Mariners, but they couldn't convert. So I thought the Tigers just did a good job hanging on, staying resilient when times got tough. And the other player I've got to shout out is Ian Kinsler. I mean, it was a big deal when Castellanos got that RBI, but for Kinsler to get with 2 outs as well and tie up that game 2-2,
right
at the bottom of the inning when the Mariners had just devastated with the Tigers. No, that was so important for this team, for them to have back-to-back innings scoring a run and tying up this game.
Yeah, Kinsler on that two-run hit, that two-out hit, he scored Jose Iglesias to tie the game. And, you know, and just looking at how that whole situation, you know, stacked up for Mike Aviles in that situation, the Tigers, of course, you know, with one out in the eighth, Victor Martinez singled to left and went to third on a double to center by Nick Castellanos. Then the Tigers inserted Andrew Romine as a pinch runner for Martinez, and the Mariners intentionally walked Justin Upton. That loaded the bases. Then Aviles, he singled on a soft grounder toward first, and then boom, that broke the tie. And then James McCann's sack fly to center brought home Castellanos to give the Tigers that 4-2 lead. So the Tigers, in my opinion, because they've had some close games here recently in this stretch of baseball here, and they're pulling it out. So there's a lot to be said about, again, battling resiliency and battling through even when you're down in late innings or if things are very tight and the game is tied. So fun. It's fun to watch this team right now, folks. Again, don't get too high. Don't get too low. It's still so early in the baseball year. Exactly. Exactly. All right, folks. Well, we are out of time. Thanks so much to all of you out there for tuning in to today's Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care. Have one fantastic afternoon, and be easy, people.